Labdhabhavo Bhagavati Kama Bandha Pramuchyate Itad. This Pramanya Devasya, of the Supreme Lord who especially favors the Brahmanas. Shudvar, hearing. Pramanyatam, of the kindness towards the Brahmanas. Dara, a man. Lavda, obtaining. Bhava, love. Bhagavati, for the Lord. Karma, of material work. Bandhat, from the bondage. Vimuchate, becomes free. Translation and report by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. The Lord always shows Brahmanas special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become free from the bondage of material work. Please repeat. The Lord always shows the Brahmanas special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become free from the bondage of material work. Purport. In the introduction to the chapter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that describes this pastime, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada comments, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supersoul of all living entities, knows very well everyone's heart. He is especially inclined to the Brahmana devotees. Lord Krishna is also called Brahmanya Deva, which means that he is worshipped by the Brahmanas. Therefore, it is understood that a devotee who is fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a Brahmana. Without becoming a Brahmana, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahman, Lord Krishna. Krishna is especially concerned with vanquishing the distress of his devotees, and he is the only shelter of his devotees. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 81st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, The Lord Blesses Sudama Brahmana. Om Jnana Tamanandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmulitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vainamaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So as is common in Vedic literature, this chapter or the narration of this pastime in Srimad Bhagavatam ends with a blessing. Bhakti is full of blessings. And actually our advancement in spiritual life is dependent on blessings. It is not by our own strength that we bust into the material world, spiritual world. Rather it is by the grace of the Vaishnavas and of the Supreme Lord. There is no other way. One has to be invited. Invited to the higher levels of bhakti. One has to receive the blessings of the superiors. So Bhagavatam, you know, offers many blessings. And the Vedas often end pastimes with blessing, such as this. The Lord always shows the Brahmanas special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become free from the bondage of material work. So simply by hearing, one can get the blessing of the Bhagavatam. Of the 9 processes of devotional service, Shravanam and Kirtanam, or hearing and chanting, are the most important, the most fundamental. Of all elements, it is the sound that has the biggest capacity to shape our consciousness. Our consciousness is very much shaped by sound. Desires can be formed through sound. By hearing about something, one develops a desire to obtain it. It said our whole conditioning starts with sound. It's the most subtle, actually. And even we see in our human form of life that the our capacity to make, to shape sound with the working sense of speech or of the tongue, that is the most powerful working sense, actually. You see Adolf Hitler, who roused a nation to the point where they wanted to try and take on the whole world, try and conquer the whole world, which is quite a big task. He roused them and whipped them into the hype of this mission simply by speaking. Simply by speaking. Similarly, you see the great souls, basically in terms of activities, what they do is speak. And that's pretty much the extent of their work. Like Srila Prabhupada, the main thing he did was speak. Also in the form of his books. Kirtanam is also a form of kirtanam, writing, and the books. Of course he spoke them. The books are all... Prabhupada didn't use a typewriter so much. Not in the West, anyway. He spoke into a dictaphone, and was then transcribed and edited. So simply by his speaking in the form of his books, in the form of giving lectures, in the form of actually chanting, and the form of instructing and guiding his disciples on an individual basis, he did so much, achieved so much. Simply with the power of speech. How did he do that? By shaping the minds and hearts of his disciples and his followers, by inspiring them, and by, you know, it says that a fool is concealed as long as he does not open his mouth. But as soon as somebody opens their mouth, you understand what is their consciousness. What is their mind? Because the, as the Bible says, the mouth spills out the overflow of the heart or the mind. So what is it, what is ever in the heart and the mind that spills out the mouth? So it's very easy to understand where somebody's at by how they speak and what they say. You can understand what they're meditating on, what their consciousness is. So, it said that a fool can be identified by what he says, but also a great soul can be identified by what he or she says. So this is, you can very much tell somebody's intelligence and someone's meditation by what they speak. Now, therefore, the power of speech is the most direct manifestation of the mind and intelligence. Intelligence especially. Intelligence is the faculty that plans how to achieve desires. It also discriminates. The mind has some idea, and then the intelligence discriminates about that. So that's the most direct manifestation of it, in the sound. Shape the sound and then put it into action, and then working senses go into action. But this is the power of speech. So simply by hearing the Bhagavatam, our consciousness is shaped. That's the point. Simply by hearing from the great souls, we develop a desire to obtain their state of being, hearing about it. And it's not even necessarily directly in the words that they speak, it's in the consciousness that comes through their words. We become inspired by that, we want to obtain that for ourselves. So simply by hearing. And here we've heard about what? Lord Krishna's kindness to the Brahmanas. There's lots of interesting terms in this verse. For example, for a start, a Brahmana. What is a Brahmana? Why is Krishna especially kind to a Brahmana? What is a Brahmana? Who knows? Yeah, Brahmana. One who knows Brahman. What is Brahman?
Spiritual.
Yeah. Brahman is Krishna. It's a spiritual substance, the spiritual reality. The eternal. Actually, everything is Brahman. Everything is Brahman, ultimately. But this Brahman, all this material energy, is acting in a certain way. It's full of transient manifestations, temporary manifestations. But actually it's Brahman, it's the energy of God. So a Brahmana is one who knows about that, what it is. And they have a lifestyle focused around cultivating further understanding of Brahman. And also a lifestyle that lifestyle that demonstrates their awareness of Brahman. Not only can you tell somebody's consciousness by what they speak, but also by how they act. So one who is genuinely a Brahmana who knows Brahman, they act in relation to their realization. Therefore they don't hanker and lament. And they don't intensely aspire for material advancement, understanding that such things are an illusion, actually. The idea to expand the concept of ownership is not a reasonable aspiration for a Brahmana. What's the point? So it's a mental concoction. Actually, everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to the Lord. Therefore, why try and expand my so-called ownership of things? Therefore, a Brahmana lives very simply. And they live a life of knowledge, cultivation of knowledge, distribution of knowledge, worship of the Lord, and worshipping the Lord for others, and receiving charity, and giving in charity. This is the activities of a Brahmana. And they exist simply on charity. Understanding that actually the ultimate supplier of all necessities is the Lord. Therefore, why should I endeavor? If the Lord wants to give me something, it will come. If the Lord does not, then why should I endeavor? This is the consciousness of a Brahmana. And the Lord pays such a person special favor. You see, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this is one of my favorite verses actually, Samoham sabhaputeshu name dvesho stina priyaha yeva janti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapa. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So basically Krishna's saying, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Or as much attention as you give to me, as much attention I will give to you. That's a simple relationship, really. So the Brahmanas, because of their cultivation of consciousness, Krishna consciousness, they're dear to Krishna. And he looks out for them. Because of their dependence on Krishna, he looks out for them. It's not that everybody else is independent of Krishna. That's an illusion. Everybody's dependent on Krishna. Because the Brahmanas acknowledge their dependence on Krishna, he shows them special favor. He looks out for them. So he is especially kind. So there's one story. There's another verse in Bhagavad Gita that says, "To those who are devoted to me, I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Preserve what they have, carry what they lack." Like that. Basically it says, whatever they don't have, I bring it to them. Whatever they do have, I make sure they don't lose it. There's one story about Jayadev Goswami. And he was with his wife. He was a Brahmana. And he was studying the Bhagavad Gita. And he read this verse in the Bhagavad Gita one day. And he was like, yeah, that's true. The Lord is looking after us. Certainly. But, you know, the way the verse is stated, it says that I, personally, Krishna, carry what they lack. I bring it to them. He's like, that's, you know, Krishna's got better things to do than to look after us in the material world. Krishna's in Vrindavan enjoying. So it should be something like, I make an arrangement by which my devotee is maintained. You know, I by some agency I look after them. I carry what they lack, and that's a bit sort of, you know, it's a bit of an overstatement. So he scratched that word out and changed it. And then, you know, he closed his Bhagavad Gita and it was time to go out begging. So he went down to the marketplace and was begging from all the stalls for any leftover, any excess they had. So he could, and this was something he did every day, so he could supply his ashram. But on this day, nothing came. Nothing came at all. And he was very surprised, because this never happened. Always he got something. So he returned home eventually, quite dejected. And his wife, he came home and his wife was already eating an elaborate quantity of food as well. She was already eating, and this was not the culture. But normally the wife would serve the husband and then she would take after he was satisfied. She was already eating. And he walked in and he said, what are you doing? You know? And where did you get all that from? She just looked at him and said, you know, anyway, she was obviously upset about something. So he pushed further and said, and she said, why did you beat those two boys? What? And then she proceeded to tell him, when you were out, two boys came to my door. Very beautiful boys. One was blackish, one was whitish. And they had a profuse quantity of food with them. And they offered it. They said, here, this is for you. This is for you. Please take it. And I noticed that the blackish boy had a cut on his head. And he said, oh, you have a cut. What? Let me tend to your wound. He said, no, that's not nothing. He said, who did this to you? How did it happen? He said, oh, your husband did this to me. What? Anyway, they wouldn't explain further. They left. So, you know, why, this is why she was angry, why are you beating young boys? Yeah, this is not proper behavior. Therefore, I simply took my meal without you. It's a wifely way of showing disdain, you know, disapproval. And hearing the description of these two beautiful boys, Jayadeva Goswami became wide-eyed with wonder. Wow, that was Krishna and Balaram. And then he went into his room and opened the Bhagavad Gita, where it crossed out the word. And again, that word there was I personally, I carry it. It had been replaced, it was back again. And then he understood, this is Krishna personally providing for his Brahmana devotees, personally. Which is, of course, very touching. Being dependent is not actually a miserable condition of life. It can be a very wonderful condition of life. When you realize the mercy of your master or lord, that is a certain rasa, which is very flavorsome. We should be dependent on the devotees, actually. What's that? I need the devotees. I need them. Not just, they're right, you know, I hang around with them. Better than the kamis anyway. No. The mood should be, I need the devotees. I'm dependent on the devotees. My Krishna consciousness is so weak, personally. I'm so weak, spiritually, that without the community of devotees, you know, I will fall down. I'll fall away from bhakti, from my service to the Lord. Therefore, I need the devotees. This is actually the reality as well. If you think otherwise, then you're in illusion. One day you'll learn it. One day. Hopefully not the hard way. So the brahmanas are dependent on Krishna, and Krishna is touched by this dependency and he reciprocates. He looks after them. So that is the lesson of this pastime, is Krishna's providing for his devotee, especially one who is a brahmana. Now it says here, Prabhupada says in his introduction to the pastime in the Krishna book, therefore it is understood that a devotee who is fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a brahmana. Without becoming a brahmana, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahman, Lord Krishna. So understanding what a brahmana actually is. Brahmana is not a label you get when you're born. Ha, you're a brahmana. You put the sticker on the forehead, stamped certified brahmana by birth. No, brahmana is a state of being. It's a state of awareness. And it is, because the thing is, you can't perform consistently certain activities without having the consciousness or the adhika, or the qualification for those activities. So you can't actually act like a brahmana consistently without actually having that consciousness. What is that? A high degree of sattva-gun. Just like, for example, to do deity worship every day, the same old, you know, this is just for the sake of the point, I'll say the same old activities, the same old prayers, getting up every day, you know, doing all the rituals and so forth. You can't do that, be so regulated, do those activities without having a lot of the mode of goodness, without being very pure, actually. You just go crazy. You just be like, I need to go and make some money, or achieve something, or do something, you know, get recognized. I have to do something passionate, basically. if you're not in the mode of goodness, if you're not pure. And you see, not many people, not many devotees, even in ISKCON, can do pujari work long term. Not many. It's very difficult. Maybe they can do a little bit, like do a Mangaladi a week or something like that. But to be on the altar every day, those devotees who can do that, they're very pure. They're very sattvic. They're actually experiencing the association of the Lord through the deity worship. They're not just, it's not a dry, empty thing for them. But the thing is, as one approaches Krishna, one becomes more pure. Naturally, it's just like if you want to approach the sun, eventually you will be consumed by fire. Eventually you'll have to become fire. So in order to approach Krishna, you have to become, you also have to become pure, because Krishna is the supreme pure. And as you become pure, your consciousness changes, and naturally the activities you're attracted to change, and so purity is a sign of godliness, of being close to Krishna. And impurity, contaminated state of being, is a sign of being far away from Krishna. But as you approach Krishna, automatically you become purified. By associating with Krishna, by hearing the Bhagavatam, by chanting, it's also Krishna. The name is non-different. By chanting the holy names, one associates with Krishna, and one is getting purified. Of course, one has to associate with the name consciously, not unconsciously. And then, one becomes purified. So automatically, one who is fully surrendered under the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a brahmana. Position of full surrender. That doesn't mean necessarily that a pure devotee just reads books all day. A pure devotee may do many activities in the service of the Lord. But the point is they're fully dependent on the Lord, and they know the conclusion of the Shastra. They know Brahman. So they're automatically a brahmana. Vaishnava is automatically a brahmana. Even though in the day they might perform activities of a different varna, they should be considered brahmanas. So it says here that by hearing this pastime, one will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become freed from the bondage of material work. So basically we have two options. One is work in the material world, or the other one is be a devotee. You can't do both things because they're inversely proportional to each other. As one gets bigger, as one engagement gets bigger, the other engagement gets lesser. You know, it's like, So, as one develops love for the Lord and begins to dedicate all one's activities to the Lord, one becomes free from the bondage of material work. It's important to recognize our state of bondage in this material world. A lot of people don't realize that, I'm free, you know. We live in a democracy. I'm free. You know, I can buy whatever I want from the shops. You know, I got money. And I don't have a curfew anymore. I haven't had a curfew since I was 15 years old. I can stay up as late as I want. Therefore, I'm free. No, if you have a body, that means you're bound up. You're forced to take birth in a body. You're first forced to grow old, get filled with sex desire and many other desires. And you're forced to get diseased and die. So many ways we're bound up. So many ways we're bound up. And all our activities in this material world have reactions. This is the thing about karma. Simply by being a good person, you can't actually escape karma. Because whatever you do, whether it's good or bad, you create some future reaction. And what does a future reaction mean? That you've got some pleasure to enjoy in the future, or some distress that you're obliged to enjoy to experience in the future. And what does that mean? Future embodiment. So more birth, death, old age and disease. So by our own activities, we can't actually escape the bondage of karma. You can't escape it. That's why the jnani, even with their mental speculation, or the yogi trying to understand, performing mechanistic yoga system, without bhakti they can't actually escape karma. It just becomes more subtle. But they're still bound up. It's only by a drop of bhakti, hopefully an ocean of bhakti, that one can become free from karma. How is that? One stops performing his activities for himself and performs them instead for Krishna. Bhakti yoga means the yoga of dedication. Devotional service, the yoga of dedication. That means we perform our activities without attachment to the result. The result is simply meant for Krishna's pleasure. And that is the whole aspiration, that's the whole motivating feature of the of activities in devotional service. And that non-attachment to the result, because one is dedicated or given the whole activity and the whole motivation for the activity, he's given that to Krishna, dedicated that to Krishna. Therefore, one can become free from the bondage of material work or material karma. There's no other way, actually. And one cannot be in this state of bhakti or dedication of all one's activities without having love for Krishna, without having some bhava, some feeling. Otherwise it will just be mechanical. Even it starts mechanical, but it should develop into bhakti. Yeah. Everybody starts practically with karma yoga. Yeah. Because we basically do what we want to do and offer it to the Lord. Yeah. And it's a little bit mechanical, but at least we're offering it. But eventually that... with the purification, eventually some feeling develops, and then it becomes bhakti, it becomes devotional. It may not even change externally, but it becomes devotional. Yeah. So there we go. Simply by hearing this pastime, by hearing about the nature of Krishna, the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas, one will become to develop love for the Lord and thus become free from the bondage of material work. You see, our whole mission is to surrender unto Krishna. But you can't surrender unto somebody that you don't trust. If you don't trust somebody, you will always be guarded. You won't surrender. Therefore, you have to know, and in order to trust somebody, you have to know the person. Nobody surrenders, you don't meet somebody on the street and just open up your heart and give your whole life over to them and surrender at the lotus feet. You don't do that. You have to know them. So we have to know about the nature of God. We have to know about Krishna. What is his personality? And And therefore his most endearing quality is Bhakti Vatsal, that he is the well-wisher of his devotees. He's the lover of his devotees. Actually. And by knowing these things about Krishna, one can trust that actually I'll be okay if I become a fully dedicated devotee. I'll be okay. It'll be alright. You know, I don't have to worry. Masu Chaha. My existence, I won't have any want. You know, I'll be sheltered, fully sheltered. Yeah. We have to understand that the Lord is a tutor, infallible. Therefore, if we take shelter of the Lord, we'll be perfectly safe, no problem. Rather than taking shelter of this material energy, which is infinitely fallible. Trying to take shelter of the body's powers, you know, of money, of other people. This whole world is fallible. The body is fallible. It will definitely die. Definitely. Money can be lost, and other people's bodies, they'll also die. And also, they could just turn against us, because that's the nature of this material world. It's full of envy. There, here we go. I envy no one. This is the verse we looked at earlier. I envy no one. Krishna says, but I envy no one. That is very significant. To be free of envy is tantamount to being pure. And when one doesn't envy others, then one has no propensity to exploit others. And that's actually what we're scared of. We're scared of being exploited. But Krishna doesn't exploit. Krishna, he accepts the devotion and offerings in the service offered to him, but he also likes to serve his devotees. Just like there's another story which is very beautiful. It's Madhavendra Puri. He was traveling and he came to a village and he sat down beneath a tree and he hadn't eaten, he'd been fasting. And he sat down beneath a tree and he was chanting. And he was so absorbed in his chanting, he was hungry, but he didn't really feel driven to go and get some sustenance. So he's just chanting. And then this young cowherd boy comes along and says, I know you, you're Madhavendra Puri. And this is my village. And in my village, no one fasts. You're fasting, aren't you? Yeah, no one fasts in my village. So here's a big pot of milk. Oh, wow. Madhavendra Puri was just like, wow, you're so beautiful. And then the boy suddenly disappeared. I said, I will come back in the morning and collect the pot. And then he disappeared. And then Madhavendra Puri suddenly realized, that was Krishna. And I didn't even recognize Krishna. Oh, no. And he couldn't sleep in all night because he was in so much anxiety. Later he had a dream though. And it was the same boy. He said, my name is Gopal. You know, and for a long time, I've been living in a bush, and I get very cold in winter and very hot in summer. So, I want you to take the villagers and go and find me. Getting this indication of how the Lord wanted him to serve him, he gathered all the villagers together and they cut their way through the forest and they found buried under a bush a deity of Gopal, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had been hidden from the Muslim invaders. This is all in Chaitanya Charitamrita, because of course Madhavendra Puri is the root of the tree of Lord Chaitanya. He is the he is the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master. And he was the first one to really feel these intense devotional feelings to such a degree. Therefore, he's the root of Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya became the flowering of that root, manifesting all the symptoms of Mahabhava and separation from Krishna. Anyway, it was very beautiful the way Krishna just turned up. This is my village, and in my village, no one fasts. And gave him a pot of milk. And activities like this of Krishna are very endearing. You know, the devotees, because Krishna doesn't have to do any of this stuff. But why does he do it? Because he's Bhakta Vatsal. He's the lover of his devotees. He wants to serve his devotees. That's where he gets his jollies, you know. That's what he's all about. That's what the personality of Godhead is all about. This enjoying rasa with his devotees. Without envy. The spiritual world is without envy. Envy is the root of all problems and anxieties in this world. So one who becomes free from envy, and you actually notice, if you practice devotional service, you notice that envy starts to go down. It still might be a lot of envy in us, but it does start to go down. And in proportion to how much our envy goes down, we experience peace and happiness. And we experience community. We experience connection with others. Envy stops us connecting with others. Envy and pride. Envy breeds pretension, pride, which build walls in between us and God, us and Krishna, and also us and the other Vaishnavas, the other devotees, the other souls of this world. The thing is, in the material world, nobody's trying to overcome this envy. So therefore, it's just all futile anyway. It's all futile. But in the community of devotees, the devotees are trying to overcome this envy, trying to be the servant of each other. And therefore it can be very nice, very sweet. One feels just like Clement Prabhu was telling me the other day about, he said, I had a very nice day today because I was speaking to Keshava Prabhu. And then all of a sudden Keshava just said, wherever you go in the world, just give us a call, we'll be here for you. And Clement said, he said that with such, it was so real, the way Keshava said that, that he felt touched deeply. And Keshava Prabhu said other things like that. I mean, he said, you know, wherever, you know, there's a certain devotee having some troubles, wherever he goes, anywhere in the world, you know, we'll be there for him, you know. And because why? Because that's just what it means, you know. That's what it means, you know. He's eternally we're connected now. And eternally we'll do whatever we can to serve that person and help them advance. So that is real. And you can't have such sentiments if you're full of envy. Again, inversely proportional. Envy and the ability to actually love. You can't love somebody you envy. Because you're always competing with them. Envy means to compete. And generally it means that you want to push one person down so you can get up. You want to push everyone else down so you can be the tall poppy. So Krishna is free from envy. What a wonderful feature. And once we know these things about Krishna, we can begin to feel safe to surrender to Krishna, depend on Krishna. And also all leadership in the Vaishnava community has to be based on this principle of being trustworthy. The foundation of trust is trustworthiness. So that means if you want to be trustworthy, you have to have a service mentality to others. And it's always that the leaders, anybody, any seniors to their juniors, they represent Krishna's mercy. So if the leaders are very loving and merciful and battling with their envy, reducing their envy, then through them the younger devotees experience the affection of Krishna. And then they think, I can stand that. And people aren't lazy. There's no such thing as a lazy person. There's an unmotivated person. But in Krishna consciousness, there's no reason not to be motivated. Like, I'm so busy since I've been a devotee. So busy. But I'm also so motivated to perform whatever service I have powerfully. And that gives me so much energy. And being motivated, being inspired. So, by the cause, and also by the leadership, I guess, by Krishna, by being basically the point I'm trying to make is that when somebody feels loved and protected, they feel enthusiastic to serve, to give their all, and they become very loyal, and then they can act very powerfully. Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they all did so much service and with so much energy and enthusiasm from such a young age, when normally you're supposed to be full of material ambition. They just gave it all up. Many of them took sannyas and just charged out there, got to do something for Prabhupada. Why? Because they felt the love and affection from Prabhupada. So this is the way it works, actually. Become enlivened if we have good influences in our life in terms of our seniors. If we feel the love and care, we become inspired to like serve. Because we understand through the devotees, we can understand the mercy and nature of Krishna. And we feel safe, and we feel that we can trust Krishna, and then we can surrender to Krishna. So simply by hearing this pastime, which is an account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas, we will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become free from the bondage of material work. Yeah. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes, Mataji. I can give very personal realizations about this, because I'm also a D type, if that's what you're talking about, outgoing task orientated. So that means you tend to like be more interested in getting things done than having, you know, good relationships. The relationships should be good, but you know, the focus is just getting things done. And therefore we, you know, that becomes a secondary concern, relating to people nicely. My realization is, in order to get things done more effectively, you should put energy into relationships. It's just like how, for example, the Urban Yoga Project, you know, if it was just one person, you know, trying to do everything, you couldn't do it. It's just like this temple, there's so much service to do. And, you know, fortunately Krishna has blessed us in the last year with some newly interested devotees, you know, in both ashrams. And what does that do? That lightens the load of everyone else. Everybody can and then relax, you know, focus on other activities. That it actually creates a surplus of energy, because rather than being flat out just trying to maintain everything, we have more people to maintain the basic activities of the, you know, maintain the temple, and therefore it becomes surplus energy. You can go out and preach. Otherwise, you can easily get locked in the loop of just trying to maintain to do all your activities. But the smarter thing to do is to relate to others, to inspire others, and get others on board as well. Get them to help out, and then you can do a lot more. You can do a lot more by having many people involved, by having a team, actually. What we can do alone is very limited. But the thing is, if you invest in people and help people overcome their obstacles within themselves that are holding them back from, you know, getting fully into devotional service, if you help, and that's the devotees as well, because preaching doesn't stop as soon as somebody like joins up, so to speak, you know, puts on a sari and puts on tilak, moves in the ashram. That preaching is not over then. It's just begun. Okay, now they're taking the process seriously. But now they've actually got to do it. They've got to finish the race. So, yeah. Helping one another and advance in devotional service is actually, and through relationships, is a very valuable activity. Because I notice with people, when they come along, they're very, they can't do much practical service because they're kind of, undermined or handicapped by their doubts, by their other material desires, by their lack of proper and clear understanding. They're handicapped by all that. But if they overcome that, they suddenly become free from all that. They suddenly become able to act very powerfully. And then you see, suddenly they start coming with all this energy and enthusiasm and ideas that are completely unexpected. You know what I'm saying? Like if you create a system or a thing or a machine to do an activity, that's fine, it can do the activity according to how you've designed it, the system. But if rather you inspire a person, then they can do the activity. They can do the activity. But then they also come in with all sorts, they think, actually I think we can improve this, we can do this other thing, we can do this other thing. And they come with all this energy and take it to a whole other level. And allow the thing to build and grow in ways that you didn't expect, in exciting ways. So that's why investing in people is actually more valuable than any other activity. It's the most important thing. It's just like, for example, Adam and Uddhava now. They're fired up about Harinam. You know, a lot of devotees, Yogamaya, Mataji, many of the devotees, they're fired up about Harinam. And it's great. Now they're doing so much with the Harinam. On Friday night, that wasn't happening before, simply by being inspired by it. You could create a system, you must be here on this time, you must do this, and this is the tune you sing, and this is the beat you play. It's like, well, you can do a little bit through the system, through managing the, impersonally managing the thing. But rather, if you create such a culture that all the individual devotees feel inspired, and then they suddenly say, I'm into this, I'm going to give 110%. I'm going to give more than is expected of me. Just like if you run a business, it's well known. If you run a business, what you have to do is create a culture that inspires people. Otherwise you can go, you give somebody a job description. You must do this activity, that activity, this activity, the other thing. and we'll pay you X amount of dollars for that. So the person comes to work and says, what do I have to do? And they do those things and then they stop. So you can't actually do much and create an organisational momentum. You can't actually do much if that's the kind of culture you have. People just do what's in their job description. As soon as they've ticked everything on the list, they stop. No, you want to create a culture where people come along and go, I am totally into this, you know. I'm gonna go home and I'm going to think about how to, like, add value to this organisation. And people do that when they feel cared for, when they feel loved. There's nothing more unmotivating or demotivating than having some clash with the devotees. And often that's what happens. A lot of people fall down because of some offence that they caused, or they were offended themselves and they brew on it. And then they become uninspired to perform their activities of devotional service there. Their sadhana, their service, and then they become more isolated from that. I'm not going to do that, you know, I'm not going to be part of this community that hurt me, or, you know, that are full of these faults, X, Y, and Z. I don't want to be a part of that. Therefore, I don't want to, you know, go on hurry. I don't want to do this activity, that activity. I'm not going to do it, you know. And then I have to do it, and it becomes... There's nothing more demotivating than these bad relationships. When the relationships are all very sweet, everybody feels inspired, everybody's heart energy is flowing out freely. And then they perform devotional service on another level. Things start happening on another level that you didn't expect, you couldn't predict. Because you've got another, just like you might be enthusiastic and, you know, putting in as much energy as you can. If another person comes to that level and they're putting as much energy as they can, and then just say they become a preacher or a book distributor, like yourself, they become a book distributor, and then they go out and they attract more people. They attract more people. And then those new people, they also become inspired in the same way. And then they want to, you know, there's something called the... sales ladder. You know, somebody starts off, they're a skeptic. I don't know about that product or service, you know, what is it, you know? And then they look into it, they become interested. What is it? I'm curious. And then they become a customer, they buy it. Oh, I like it, you know, it's pretty good. And then they become enthusiastic, they become what's called an advocate. They start telling their friends, you should get this product, it's great. Well, no, they recommend it to others. And then they become what? An evangelist. They actually go out on their own energy and steam and start trying to sell the thing, you know, themselves. So they moved up that ladder. And the same with happens with devotional, with Krishna consciousness. Somebody comes along, what is this, you know? And then, you know, they get to the point of joining up, so they buy the product. And then if they have a really good experience in that, they become an advocate and then an evangelist. And then they duplicate, you've duplicated yourself. And that person can then duplicate themselves again. And that's how it expands. But just, if we don't focus on, if we don't see this side of things, we just focus on doing all our own activities, we just end up with a lot of work to do. And it doesn't get any easier. Eventually you get old and die. So that's why it's so important, actually, in the Krishna consciousness movement. This limb of preaching, of reaching out, is so important for maintaining the vibrancy. Otherwise, you know, there's so much to do that everybody gets burned out. But if you're constantly preaching, then it, you know, pretty soon you've easily covered all your routine activities. And then you've got all the surplus energy to put into the exuberant kirtans, into exuberant preaching. And that's the whole point, isn't it, anyway? That's the whole point of Prabhupada's mission, is to practice Krishna consciousness and distribute it. So that's how I think about it. Yeah? It's just like, for example, you can distribute lots of books on the street and get a big book score. But what about all those people that have got the books? They're a little bit interested and they need some help. Is it worth, you know, you might think, you know, they need help, but I could be out like getting more book points, distributing more books, but this person needs some help. What do? You have to say, okay, I'm going to invest my time, which is limited, I'm going to invest it in helping this person. And that's, you know, that is actually a really worthwhile investment. Otherwise, you're going to have heaps of people with books who can't understand them, and everybody's too busy to talk to them, you know? Everybody's too busy to talk to them. Certainly, you should be, you have to be efficient about that as well. You have to find who's actually got a real spark. And if I fan that spark for them, does it actually blaze up? You shouldn't get a whole lot of people that you just have to babysit all the time. You should look for those people with real potential, who with a real burning enthusiasm that just needs a little bit of help. You know, you remove this obstacle, remove that obstacle, and all of a sudden they take off.
Yeah.
Because time is valuable, so you don't just want to find down and out people who are just always like depending on you. I mean, there's a place for that that's required. But if you really want to be effective, you want to find those people with a lot of potential, with a lot of sincerity. I had this mantra, what is it? Prioritize sincerity and facilitate potential. So the more sincere somebody is, the more attention you should give them. And if they've got potential, you should facilitate it. Somehow create some service that they can do, give them some guidance in such a way that they get some facility to express their enthusiasm, some service to express their enthusiasm, and thus advance. Prioritize sincerity, facilitate potential. So considering in that way, you can overcome the tendency to have relationships as a secondary thing. If you want another motivating factor, Dave Marita Swami, Gurudev, he once told me, because I cultivated one boy, Freeman Krishna, in New Zealand. I'd spend a lot of time with him. You know, he was very enthusiastic initially. He called me up all the time, let's hang out, let's read Bhagavad Gita. So I was just like, okay. Anyway, I had a friendship with him, and that, you know, I didn't do much, but somehow or other became a devotee. Dave Marita Swami said once, this is the best thing you've ever done. This is the most important thing, investing in people, cultivating people. And he said, Mahavan and Krishnaloka, they've got the right idea, because they invest in people. Whatever you do, whether it's in the secular world or the devotional community, investing in people is the biggest way to advance the organization. Investing in people. People are the biggest asset. In Krishna consciousness, in a volunteer movement, they're the only asset, really. Without people, you can't do anything. And Krishna consciousness is not so much an organization or an enterprise, you know, an institution. It's a community. Krishna consciousness is a community. And the goal is to extend that community and allow others to get involved with that community. And what is that community ultimately? It's a community centered around Krishna and Krishna's service. So understanding in that way, you can understand the value and the importance and actually the essential feature of relationships and investing in those relationships. Taking time to invest in somebody else's life in a loving, caring way. And once you experience the fruits of that, you'll be convinced. You'll be completely convinced that it's worthwhile, you know. Because in the end, you know, you're old on your deathbed, all the book scores. Look at all my book scores. What's really going to touch you is when people come and say, you know, you had a really big effect on my life, you know. Perhaps if it wasn't for you, I might not have made it in devotional service. That's really what's gonna be important. That's what is important.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just in relation to that, Prabhupada, he was like an example in that area himself. Like, he just, in the early days, he just wanted to translate books and just concentrate on translating books, but he found that he just couldn't avoid himself or getting involved in the whole movement.
Yeah.
And having some contact or some impact on the running of the whole movement.
Mm. Yeah, and caring for each individual devotee. Five levels of leadership. This is not from the Shastra, but anyway, it's interesting. Level one, positional leadership. It's my position, I'm in charge, therefore you must do it. That's the lowest level. It's not very effective. Generally, people do exactly as much as they have to and then stop. Next level is the relational level. Why do I follow you? Because you're nice to me. Because you're kind and caring. Therefore, I'm happy to serve you. What's the next level? Level three? Resolves. I follow you because I like you, and also because I see by following your direction, I practically achieve something. We achieve something together. So therefore, I'm excited about it. You won't get that to that level if you haven't got the second level, which is being civil with people, being kind and caring to people. What's the fourth level? People investment level. This is when you get deep loyalty. So I follow you because of what you've done for me personally. Because you've invested your life into my life, and you've helped me. You've helped me advance. You've helped me improve myself. You've helped me extend my abilities, my potential. Therefore, I'm deeply loyal to you. And if we can just attain to level four, that'd be good. That's very important, the mentoring level. Level five leadership is legendary leaders, who just the cause of what they represent is a legacy. Like, for example, Srila Prabhupada. He represented something so much bigger than himself, actually, that he became he's a legendary leader because of the cause he's part of. But yeah, relationships are so important. You notice the very advanced devotees, practically in the end, they do two things. They give classes, and then they counsel devotees. And what does counsel devotees mean? When they sit down with them, they, talk to them, they help them with their problems, and they basically give them love, affection, and practical guidance. That's practically the two things they do, and then they achieve so much through their disciples. They don't actually do a lot of, they don't go and, sand the floor of the yoga sphere themselves, but they inspire them to do that. And therefore, so much gets done based on, through them, indirectly by them, through their agencies. But you can't be a leader if you don't know how to relate to people. And to be a preacher also means to be a leader, because you're leading others towards Krishna. Yeah. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Yes, I heard all this before, and I started reading the book by Srila Prabhupada, The Art of Silence. It's very much like that. Would you be able to speak a little bit about that book, and maybe if we send a few copies around, just inspire some devotees to read it by speaking about it? Yeah, is it a good speaker?
I haven't read that book for a while. In that book, Srila Prabhupada just explains about how to have kirtan, nice kirtans, what the mood should be, and then a lot of practical things like how to how to play the instruments, especially when you're having kirtans with new people, how to get them to dance, how to do a harinam nicely so it's all neat and tidy and can involve people. It's really with the Harinam, it's good to be. You've got to understand that it's for the people. It's not for the devotees. Just get into a brahmachari huddle, and spin around in this tight little ball. It's all focused in on itself, It's actually meant to attract others to the holy name. So rather than trying to enjoy the Harinam ourselves, so to speak, naturally, if you're in the service spirit, you will enjoy. Krishna won't let you not enjoy. but the mentality should be, I'm doing this as a servant, as a service. Therefore, my whole meditation is, what is best, what is going to be make it most accessible to the people. And to that end, he gives many different techniques, how to dancing and this and that, how to make it materially nice, so people can access the spiritual juice of the whole thing. It's just like kirtans at the loft, it's not so much for the devotees, it's for others, And others aren't ready to basically you start, start a temple kirtan, and I was like, Nama, and immediately the devotees start leaping up and down, Why? Because they're sold out to it already, They've already got complete buy-in. But a new person is just like, they're still, those five level, the sales ladder, You start off as a skeptic. They're skeptical. What is it, If it's just like a whole lot of men in a scrum over there and a whole lot of women over there, in a lady scrum. it's like this is weird, I don't know if I'm very skeptical about this, But if it's nice, well presented, and focused, you got to realize it's kind of like a performance actually. Even better than a performance is if you get other people to join in. And that's how I became a devotee, It was out late at night and I saw Sitapati's Harinam and I joined in. That happened a couple of times and then I was like, wow, this is something special here, So then I went to the Krishna Fest and I became a devotee gradually. So you got to treat it differently to a temple kirtan. You have to understand it's a service. And there's many things you can do, like you do little marching drills, how to just make it. The thing is, has to have some leadership. Somebody has to know what's happening. Otherwise, if everybody's just kind of like, and it just kind of like, it's left to fate how the whole thing develops, and nobody's really creating a vision and directing the thing, then it often becomes a bit of a. What it turns into is it just goes onto the default. What is the default? The little scrums, and the just what everybody knows. But if somebody says, no, what we're doing is this, and da, da, da. So that requires individuals to be, know what they're doing, have some vision. And I always suggest people who are naturally, leadership in a volunteer movement, you have to find the people who are actually good at it, and who are actually fired up about it, and let them do it. And give them their guidance so they can become expert at it as well. Because if they've got the desire and then they're equipped with competency, then that's a very powerful combination. And we all have, our areas where we're particularly enthusiastic, the things we like to do. So we should do those really nicely and become expert at them. And then in different areas we can become leaders. In those areas where we are enthusiastic and competent, naturally we'll become leaders in that part, because everybody will look to that person who is enthusiastic and who knows what they're doing. So therefore I suggest if you're enthusiastic about something, just study it, get advice from those who are already expert at it, and study how to do it nicely, practice it and become expert, and then and then do it nicely for the Lord and inspire others. And then what you'll find is some people naturally, new people will come along and they'll naturally, because in the beginning you can't see exactly what a person's enthusiasm is what their kind of area is, you know. So you just let them do a lot of different things, and then you see that, like, in some areas they're particularly enthusiastic, so then you encourage them there. Okay, now become very expert at that. Like, Harinam's not, for me, it's, I like Harinam, but it's, you know, it's not my department, so to speak. It's not something I'm naturally good at. I like going on Harinam. Other people, it's just like they're really good at it, they're enthusiastic about it, so therefore become very expert and lead it. And then everybody's fired up about their department and the whole temple's running nicely. Some people, like Gopal Guru, for example, is fired up about the catering. You couldn't stop the guy. We could go to three events this New Year's. It's three possible events. It's going to be really difficult, but we can do it, you know. We can do it. I can squeeze another one in here. I know it, you know. You can't hire that kind of enthusiasm. It has to come because the person is inspired by the cause, but inspired by their leadership, and also they've found their area. So they've found their area, let them do it. Then you don't have to fire them up all the time, you don't have to motivate them. They just naturally fire up. All you need to do is facilitate them, and maybe give them a bit of guidance how to do it more effectively. So I'd suggest, you know, just read the book. Talk to Siddhapati himself. There's many devotees who are very experienced with Harinam. Keshava, for example, has been doing Harinam for years and years and years. Yeah, kirtan is very powerful, you know. If you get very expert kirtans happening, then it's very attractive. You've got to put energy into it if you want to be good at it. You've got to practice, you've got to think about it. You've got to take time to work on it. Because generally in the heat of the moment, you just fall back on what you already know. You know? You just fall back on what you already know. But if you spend time outside of, you know, the show, or when you actually have to do it, practicing it, thinking about it, planning it, and then when you actually get into the heat of the moment, you can fall back on your higher level of practiced ability. Yeah, so just put time into it and study it. Yeah. Anything else? Thank you very much. Gontrod Srimad Bhagavatam.